This episode of Linux Action Show is brought to you by GoDaddy.com.
And by Ting.com. Head over to last.ting.com and save $25 off your first device.
Welcome to the Linux Action Show, Season 26, Episode 2. My name is Chris.
My name's Matt.
Good morning to you, Matt.
Morning.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Happy St. Patrick's
Day. We have the luck of the Irish with us today, Matt, because we're reviewing OpenSUSE 12.3. Oh, yeah. That's coming up in the second half of the show. And there's some pretty interesting touchstone features of this distribution that I think if you haven't followed OpenSUSE for a little while, you're probably not familiar with them. So we're going to cover those. That might make you turn your head a little bit.
I think so.
So stay tuned for that. Plus, in the news, we're going to talk about Mr. Stallman's birthday.
Yes.
It's a big day. Plus, a few other interesting little tidbits in there, and it looks like competition around Wayland's heating up, so we'll cover that.
Oh, big news there.
I know. And then in the latter half of the show, we'll cover some emails, you know, answer some questions and things like that. We've got a really great voicemail that came from across the pond.
Right on.
And something that involves a monkey suit.
There's talk of some monkey action going on. Do you want to stay tuned for that?
It's going to be the monkey action show at the end of the show. But first, it is our picks, like we do at the beginning of every show. And I've got a great Runs Linux pick this week.
All right.
Cool. Ready for this?
I'm ready.
Sent in by TuxMM. He emailed the show, and he said, guess what? I work in a hospital in Virginia as a nurse. By the nurse's station, there's a large screen that displays which rooms are occupied and which are open. Tonight, it wasn't working.
Oh, yeah.
At some point, when I peeked over at it, I noticed something very familiar. The Linux boot up sequence was showing init messages.
Oh, nice.
I want to take a picture of it, but of course, they don't allow us to have phones in there. Yeah. Moments later, though, I saw a stripped down Fluxbox desktop appear, and then later, a Java web application started loading up. He says that the system is run by McKesson. So I went out and did a little Google search. The McKesson's got a few of these from all kinds of things, from like standard, like just dumb terminals to like full-on touchscreen devices that are all running Linux.
Nice.
A lot of them are Red Hat Enterprise variant, and they've been around since about 2007, and they're selling massive in the medical industry.
Sweet.
Yeah. So
that's awesome. That's really cool.
Yeah, TuxMM, I appreciate you emailing that into the show. If you have something up close and personal that you've ran into that runs Linux, like something in the field, you know, like something on the
slot machines, ticket counters,
we've seen a lot of the airline ones. Airline. Send us some new ones. Email the show, linuxactionshow@jupiterbroadcasting.com. Extra bonus picks, points if you can attach a picture to the email.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Or start a thread in our subreddit and include it in there over at linuxactionshow.reddit.com.
And being that I've had some experience with pictures being sent and that not always working out, please don't self-host. Just do image.
Imagers works, right?
Just use something else.
All right, Matt. Well, I came across I had a need this week for an Android application that solved a very specific purpose, and one that I think if you're looking for a great way to do free text messaging across platforms that includes picture support, emoticon, and a lot of like really nice extra benefits, then I've got a great pick for you guys.
Looking forward to that.
All right, Matt. But first, let's thank our first sponsor this week, GoDaddy.com.
Woo-hoo!
Now, longtime fans of the show know that the Linux Action Show has a special connection to GoDaddy.
Very special.
They've been supporters of the show for years and years, and they, of course, are big in the Linux scene. They have tons of Linux servers, and they work with a specific female race car driver who also is a big fan of Linux and loves breaking into GoDaddy data centers using her race car and stealing awesome discounts for us.
Right through the wall.
It's kind of incredible, and I believe the entire time she's doing it, she's just texting me. With this new app.
That might be why she's going through the wall.
Well, yeah, she's very, very good at multitasking.
Absolutely. Well, you could drive with your knees and text, sure.
So you guys out there, I'm not going to tell you who it is. I don't want to drop a name, but you might there might be a hint as to who it is. So when you're over at GoDaddy.com, use a special discount that Danica's hooked us up with because these are only available to us. When you're checking out, if you'd like to get some amazing hosting, I'm talking a year of economy hosting for $1 a month, use our code HOSTDEAL3 when you check out. HOSTDEAL3 because it's the third month. Not the munch, but the munch.
Third munch.
It could be your third munch. You could, you know.
You never know, the whole munching thing. But no, I think...
Why buy on an empty stomach?
But, you know, if you are munching and you're starting a whole new project and maybe you're munching while you're doing that, is the way to host it.
Yeah.
I mean, because what a great way to
host
start
deal three.
Yeah.
And host deal three and you get 12 months of hosting for $1. You can throw something up there and just see what sticks. Look, though, if you're doing something else, maybe you've got a renewal, maybe it's something new you want to buy, you can get 35% off. Go 35. Ooh. Right? Go 35 because it's 35%.
I have two renewals this month, right?
There you go. buddy.
I need to do it.
Go 35 off three. You get 35% off of what you're... Now, you got this has to be a new purchase, like your first time using it.
Okay.
But there you go. Go nice. 35 off three.
Well, I actually have another separate domain that I need to do brand new, so that works.
And look, you guys, when you visit those links in our show notes, that lets GoDaddy know that you appreciate them sponsoring the show. And even if you're not there to buy a product, they at least appreciate you checking out what their services and offering are.
Totally.
So it's a win-win for everybody. So please visit those links, check out our codes, and support our sponsors because they keep us going. And we really appreciate GoDaddy.com for sponsoring the Linux Action Show.
Big thank you.
All right, Matt, let me tell you about this great app pick. So first of all, I'll say it's free, and the service to use it is absolutely free. Now, I don't know what all of the back-end privacy situation is here.
Sure.
So I'm making that disclaimer. So, you know, sometimes you got to just take a free service and keep certain, you know, usage.
Use some common sense.
Yeah. All right, it's called Kik Messenger, K-I-K Messenger, and it is available for iOS and Android. And that was something key because my female companion, also known as my wife, mother of my children, is an Internet OS user on the Internet phone device.
Yeah, so is my wife.
Made by the Apple computer.
Yeah, same with my
wife. Being able to text her back and forth was fine over Google Voice because we both have a Google Voice account.
Oh, right.
And that's functional, right?
Sure.
However, sometimes if you've used Google Voice for a while, and let me tell you, I have used Google Voice since it was a private invite called Grand Central,
and it was
way before Google ever owned them, right? So I've used their service for a long time, and I can tell you that sometimes it just randomly slows down, and it just stops delivering. And the other problem, and when you have kids, this becomes a bit of an issue, or maybe adorable pets, is no picture messaging.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
And that drives me crazy.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, oh, they just did the greatest thing, and you want to send it, and you can't see it.
Yeah.
How frustrating. Set.
Yeah, and that drives me absolutely crazy, and it's just been something that Google's known that we've wanted forever, and they just don't really seem to be that motivated in implementing new features. Yeah. And to be honest, the experience on the iPhone is subpar.
It's like an HTML app, or I don't know, whatever. It's pretty weak.
So that's where Kik comes in. Now, on Android, it is a fantastic, fully integrated experience that works well with your notification systems. It integrates well with them. Like, if you have notifications on your... my VM just decided to go crazy. If you have notifications on your, up in your little status here, it'll give you previews of what the message is.
Oh, yeah. See, that's the Android difference, in my opinion. And that's awesome.
And whereas on the iPhone, it is a push notification.
It still does what it needs to do for the iPhone users.
Yeah.
They're happy with
it.
Exactly.
That's
great. Whatever.
So so she wasn't like totally thrilled with it versus like the integrated iMessage system, but it's good enough for her. And we were able to do pictures. It has certain features, like you can tie into Reddit and you can send Reddit pictures back and forth.
Oh, that's cool.
You can draw. And it's all free. It's all free and it's instant. It's like instantaneous. And one last thing I like about Kik Messenger is it gives you a read and delivery status, so I can see when she's gotten the message.
See,
I can
that
see she's
right
read
there
it.
Is am yeah. I did I did I, for myself did I upset my wife and is she reading my messages?
Mm-hmm.
I want to know.
Mm-hmm. So that's called Kik Messenger, and you can find it for free in the Android Play Store, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes as well. Now, all right,
check that
Matt.
Out.
Now, something that happened that was big news this week, real big news.
Big news
was Google announced the shutdown, eventual shutdown, the impending shutdown of Google Reader.
There was a candlelight vigil over this, folks.
I mean, is there?
Yeah,
I think there's like, a hunger strike now.
I mean, they're getting ready to raid the walls here, man. It's bad.
It is pretty bad. Now, so if you are a Google Reader user, you might be a little bit in a tough spot. I've never been totally thrilled with any particular desktop RSS reading application.
Yeah, it's tough to get your. Yeah, I'm with you on that as well. It's hard to find that perfect. And honestly, it just really was. It was bad.
it seems like they have, you know, there's different features and pros and cons.
Yeah.
But the one that I've used on and off a lot is Lifera and RSS Owl and a few others. But we started a thread over in the subreddit. And I asked folks, what's your favorite RSS reader? And people chimed in with a bunch of really great ideas. NewsBeater seemed to be the number one.
Oh, I haven't heard of that one.
Yeah. Now, the other thing that's really cool is there's Light Reader. There's another one that's also another web-based one. So essentially, a few folks recommended readers that almost are direct replacements for Google Reader in the sense that you throw them up on your own, you know, web server, PHP, MySQL box, and then you import your OPML feed, and it's essententially a hosted.
And I think Google Reader has pretty good export support for OPML, so it shouldn't be a big deal. And once you find that perfect match, depending on what you want, maybe you decide to go local, maybe you want to do web based. Mm-hmm. I think you'll feel better about this whole Google Reader thing.
I'm checking out Feedly. Have you tried Feedly?
No.
Yeah, so Feedly's okay. It's
okay. It's not really
It's a little, well, you're not going to see it there. The one thing about Feedly that's a little different is it's very visual-based, so it's a little more like, have you used Flipboard before?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's a little more like Flipboard in the sense that it's got very big tiles and
Flipboard to me was just lots of visual noise.
Yeah, yeah.
But it might work for news. Now if it's so my news, I might like it.
So it's kind of like almost like a newspaper. So here's so here I've just made like an Android newspaper.
Right.
Yeah, it's a feed. It's a good feed. I like a long list because I have hundreds of feeds for these shows, mm-hmm. so I need to be able to process hundreds of feeds in 15 minutes.
Right.
This is not that. This is sit back and browse the news stories and just see what piques your interest.
Exactly. It's lacking that the dynamic search feature to where it's starting to actually trim down as you're typing letters. Kind of
the one thing that's kind of nice about Feedly is Feedly has already, because they've seen the writing on the wall with Google Reader, has already started to implement their own API replacement. So they've cloned the Google Reader API, and they're going to make that available to application developers who want to continue to use a lot of like the sync features of Google Reader. And theoretically, they'll be able to move from using the Google APIs to using the Feedly APIs.
That might actually work out for folks.
So you might start seeing some of these desktop applications that integrate Feedly as well. But anyways, so we'll include the link in the show notes. This is kind of, I'm punting a desktop pick this week because essentially there's a lot of options for an RSS reader on a Linux desktop.
Yeah, it's like Life Theory or whatever and all the others.
But I'm not thrilled with a lot of them.
Yeah, because I find myself I'll install them. And then I'm thinking, I have an RSS reader. And then I'm kind of thinking, I'd rather just do it on the web. I already got my browser open, right?
Yeah, because that's the other thing about it, too. And that's a fantastic point, is because everything you do kind of just eventually throws you back in the web browser anyways. So,
especially partial feeds.
One of the things I kind of want to do with this pick is I kind of want to test the waters and see if there's interest out there for the Linux Action Show to cover a Google Reader replacement. You host your own. We try to find something that's pretty straightforward to set up. You throw on your own box. It's web-based. Maybe something has a nice smartphone interface, something like that. If you guys have an interest, go into that subreddit thread that I've linked in the show notes and toss your vote in there.
We're open to ideas. Yeah, really.
Absolutely. All right, Matt. Well, let's do the news.
Hey, this episode is brought to you by
Ting.com. Thank you to Ting.com for sponsoring this week's episode of the Linux Action Show. What is Ting? You don't know what Ting is? Ting is mobile that makes sense. I'm a new customer, and I love Ting.com. I cashed in some Bitcoins, Matt, and I got myself a Note 2. And I'm running this on Ting service, and the two things combined are delicious, tasty, wonderful. I'm really happy with not only my Note, but the Ting service. And we've been hearing from a ton of you out there, and I really appreciate getting your emails and the threads you've started that have tried out Ting, and you guys are loving it. Let me tell you a little bit about Ting if you don't know about it. Ting.com has no contracts, no early termination fees. It's truly and completely contract free. No other BS attached. There's no overage penalties. You just pay for what you use. I love that. No secret sneaky charges on your bill, just the regular taxes you'd expect, nothing hidden in there, nothing slipped in. And of course, they have fantastic customer service. And when you're talking about a phone company,
I mean, this is a thing, from what I understand, you are actually able to call in and speak to a person without actually dealing with the automated press this, press that, and all that other
stuff. Yeah, if you call in between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern, you get a person.
That's real reasonable.
Yeah, you get an actual person. If you call into 1-855-TING-FTW. But let me tell you why I love Ting. First of all, they've got some of the best, cell phone services for real people.
Yeah.
Some of the best free features out there included hotspotting when you get their data plan. That's one of the big reasons I went with this Note is the removable back on this Note means I can pop in a different battery. And so if I'm running this thing in hotspot mode all the time.
Oh, right. You can totally just
put a new battery. No big deal. I'm thinking for Linux Fest and stuff like that, it's going to be nice. And it's almost like having a full-on tablet that's always connected. So I love that. Of course, they've got all of the great standard call features like voicemail, call forwarding, three-way calling, all that great stuff.
And you keep
reporting.
Your costs under control too, which is really nice.
You know, the thing about the Ting plans is really, really what I love. You can mix and match as you might want. So you can say, maybe I need a 500 minutes because I'm a medium user, but I don't need any text messages because I'm using that great Kick Messenger app that Chris just told us about.
Love that.
But I want a gigabyte of space.
Kind of important.
You know, that gigabyte of transfer also includes the hotspotting and the tethering, which I just can't get over. I just think that's so great.
Yeah.
And, it dialed in right there. This is going to be better than anything you're going to get from somebody else for $39 a month, plus whatever the tax
might be. For me, that's where it really drives it home. It's this makes sense with a C.
Yeah. I love the fact, too, that it's just a flat rate to add another phone. So when I want to get my wife onto Android, which is going to happen eventually, that iPhone will die eventually, then it's just another...
Accidentally.
It might accidentally get thrown in the toilet. Just saying. You know what, though? When it does land in that toilet, it's flat $6 a month. And then, boom, I've added it to my Ting account. And one other really great thing about Ting is some of the management tools. You know, they have very clean UI where everything's just laid out, very simple to understand. They have like usage bars and graphs, and I can log in there. It's like a little meter. I can see I've used X amount of my storage.
So you're
space
able to see your cost to benefit immediately.
And I'm able to closely monitor. Like, here, you know what? I'll log into my account right now. I'll show it to you, man.
There it is.
So you can see here.
That's cool. I like the little. I see what you mean about.
I'm a few days. I'm a few days into this month's service, and you can see I've used this much of my megabytes. I've used this much of my text messages because I've gotten like.
You know what's awesome about that compared to other carriers too is you're not having to dance around three or four pages to get to all the information.
Right there.
It's all right there.
And all of the devices on my account are right here, and you know any alerts that I need to pay attention to.
Oh, wow.
If I want to add a device or port a device, I just do it all right through here. It's very cool. So
that's cool.
Yeah, I love Ting. Check out las.ting.com, las.ting.com to get $25 off your first device or $25 off your entire service. And this is really the type of service that is meant for our type of audience. I don't want a contract. I want full control over my phone. I don't want a bunch of junk on there, and I want to put it on any service I want, and that's what Ting allows
me to do. And they got a great page and tools to help and see if your phone's going to work for you. And it usually will. I think you'd be surprised.
Absolutely. So thank you to Ting.com for sponsoring this week's episode of the Linux Action Show. And please go check out last.ting.com to let them know you appreciate their support and see if what they're offering is maybe right up your alley. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Ting. All right, Matt, let's start with a very happy news story. I love it whenever we get a little good news at the beginning of the
segment. Good news.
And that is, of course, a big happy birthday to Mr. Richard Stallman. Mm-hmm. He just turned 60.
That's awesome.
Friday?
Yeah, I think it was Friday. Saturday? Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
So it was yesterday, Saturday. March 16th is Stallman's 60th birthday. So congrats to him. And, of course, you know, we've had Richard Stallman on the show.
Yep.
We've had disagreements with Richard Stallman. Mm-hmm. But you really cannot deny some of the amazing contributions. And really, there's just no way GPL software would be where it's at today. I mean, it's just no way. The GPL software would not be where it's at. And he continues to push the line. And it's, you need somebody out there doing that. So,
and his birthday runs free software. I think that's important.
I hope that cake was an open recipe there.
I believe it was. I bet it was.
I think that might have been GIMPed. I don't think that's a real... I hope it was GIMPed. I hope that was
It could have been some GIMPing.
I hope that wasn't Photoshopped.
I hope not.
Happy birthday, Mr. Linus. Or Mr. Linus. Richard.
Whatever his name is.
There's a story down there about Linus that I was eye-spying as we were...
Slippage.
This one's really neat. You know, you could say you could give or take when the government gets involved and mandates technology.
Yeah.
That can always make you a little nervous. But this one seems like it's got the right intentions. Government mandates a preference for open source. Now, this is coming from computerweekly.com, and they're talking about the Government Service Design Manual, which was just released on March 14th, which lays out standards that all new digital public services across Whitehall must follow. So I believe this is across the pond here, Matt. It's not obviously here in the U.S.
Not here. Okay.
And what it basically does, and this is something that NASA is, kind of bring it back to the U.S. too, this is also an approach that NASA has kind of adopted. And the essential philosophy is use open source software in preference to proprietary or closed alternatives, in particular for operating systems, network software, web services, database, and programming languages. Okay?
Okay.
Now, the whole idea is that if they prefer open, that's essentially going to be something that's better for them in the long run, not just for cost savings, but also because they don't get boxed into a vendor-specific solution.
Not only that, but you also got transparency to the people that are inhabiting wherever the government is running. Mm-hmm, so that kind of matters.
So I wanted to bring this story up, not so much to document the event itself, because this isn't the first time we've talked about something like this. Do you see a negative side to government mandating open source when preferable?
You know, I'm not a big mandate guy myself under most circumstances, but I will say that in this particular instance, just saying, look, here's some realities. We need software to do stuff. We can either take the taxpayer money and buy a bunch of stuff that may or may not end up, as you pointed out, locking us into something in the future, or we can, in fact, take the open source approach, provide as much transparency as possible, and potentially and most likely provide significant cost savings as well. And I think that's a win-win. So they're taking a necessary evil and they're making the best out of it they can.
Let me give you the devil's advocate here. I don't necessarily agree with this take, but here's what you could say is Couldn't you see it as one of the functions of the government to invest into local economy? And by buying a software vendor's, ideally a local software vendor, local to the nation,
right,
software vendor's product, you are investing capital into the technology industry, theoretically then adding more jobs, theoretically creating more of that industry. And so therefore making it stronger.
Right.
Now, I'm assuming this is a big, fat government contract, multiple millions, maybe, more than that. So that's where I'm coming at from that. Now, I don't necessarily agree with that.
That devil's advocate thing, you're right.
But devil's advocate, is there maybe an unsaid cost to choosing open source?
Here's the reality. By doing the whole local thing, that feels good. It makes it's like mom's apple pie and all that fun, happy, touchy-feely
stuff. Good economics,
it's good economics in some instances when it's not public funds. When it's public funds, it comes down to avoiding vendor lock-in, and it comes down to using the money as wisely as possible, because newsflash, that's taxed income. I mean, that's taxed money from somewhere. That's not something that just grew off a tree, unless you're the federal government. So I think that with that understanding, I think that's
true.
It's just they really have to really look at that as being responsible as possible. And that's not to say they can't support the local economy for other things. But I think when it comes to software, they need to really look at cost and that sort of thing. And if it's not local, that's too bad.
And you have a good point. The long-term implications of vendor lock-in are probably more costly than any kind of economic magical investment that may or may not be there when you supposedly buy proprietary software.
Right.
Because, that vendor contract will be a cow that gets milked for
years.
We
see that here in Washington with a certain place in Redmond, certain company in Redmond a lot, and that happens. And it's not necessarily healthy. It feels good initially, and then you look at it a year or two down the road when all the freebies start getting turned off, and it's like, oh, we're locked in, and they know it, and they're not giving us that free stuff anymore. Whoops.
Yeah. So I encourage that kind of those kind of mandates, and they're not a hardline policy. They're just saying evaluate and prefer when possible.
Yeah.
All right, Matt. This next story, we've got a few emails about. People seem to be kind of excited.
Mm-hmm.
So remember we talked about Backtrack had a big release coming.
Yeah.
And as part of that big release, they'd be transforming into Kali or Kale Linux.
I like to call it Kali.
Kali Linux.
Yeah.
Kali, like from Firefly. All right, so Kali Linux, which is, if you're not familiar, a very, very high-end security and penetration testing suite. And it is, it's just been, they just, fresh off the distros, released this new version, and it includes an ARM-based spin,
which
could be
awesome.
Interesting.
See, that's going to open some really interesting possibilities.
So it looks essentially a lot like the original version of Backtrack, but if you go a little deeper, you'll see that there's a whole new underversion of Debian, I believe it's based on, all new versions of the packages. What I really am excited to try, though, is if I would really love to try, like, building. This is why I'd want a Raspberry Pi. And I finally
You're trying to justify that.
Just get a little Raspberry Pi.
Right.
You put Kali Linux or Kali or
Kali, whatever.
Kale or whatever. Yeah. You put that on there.
Sure.
And then you put in like a nice little case or like a little wood case.
Sex it up a little bit.
And then you've got like a little penetration box that, you'd have to get the Ethernet one to really make this fully work, right? And then you just drop that on somebody's network.
That would be
plug
really...
it into their Ethernet jack, come back,
and
it does
the work for you. So you're off, basically, you've already got the fee to walk in the door, so that's taken care of. The box is doing the work for you. You're out to having lunch.
We've covered Backtrack on the show. We've covered Nessus before.
Mm-hmm.
We've covered, in the Backtrack review, we did a penetration... Remember, we did Metasploit.
Oh, that was cool.
We compromised another machine. I know we've covered this ground before, but I'd really like to know if there's interest. I think there is interest in the audience to review this. So maybe in a week or two, we should throw this on the show for review and give people a link, maybe a demo.
Cool. It would be even cooler if we actually got working on a Pi.
Well, we don't have one.
We don't have a Pi. So if you guys want to send us a Pi, we'll supply the address at the end of the show, and you can send us one in, and we'll consider it.
If you want to load it with Kali Linux for us too, that would be
absolutely. But I think just in general, seeing how this works, and maybe even kind of looking at how it contrasts to the previous release back when it was Backtrack.
Kind
of cool.
I think that'd be fun to do, and maybe we could break something, maybe hack something. But it's out for download now. So go grab it and scan it for your own network.
Yes.
Go see what you find.
And maybe go to the subreddit and share some results. And, go feel free to throw up those IP numbers and all that.
That's
fine.
Yeah,
we'll take a look for you.
Congrats to the, I guess we can no longer call it the Backtrack project, though.
Yes.
That's too bad.
I kind of liked Bactria, I honestly, because then I can, you know, finally we have a name in Linux that I can pronounce.
That yeah,
doesn't
right,
have a K in
right,
front of it,
right,
you know,
right.
That's the only other thing I can pronounce.
It's shipping with this iCat, which is an interactive kiosk attack tool.
Does it shape like a heart?
Oh, boy, I don't know. It's
that's
pretty,
kinda,
that's,
looks
that's
like
pretty
a,
intense,
looks like
it?
An adult site, but yeah.
Yeah, it almost does, doesn't
it's
it?
Like, hmm.
It's pretty
Send
intense.
Me that link, Chris.
this might be something we do between segments, Matt. All right, so moving on. Last week we talked a lot about Mir. Talked a lot about Wayland. And one of the things that was suggested in our conversation was potentially this would maybe spur some competition between Wayland and Mir.
I think there's definitely going to be some competition. So in the interest of making things interesting, I'm a bit of a betting man, and I probably bit off more than I could chew, but I committed to this, and everybody in the subreddit knows what I'm already going to say. If Wayland overtakes, I think I said a year from now on the subreddit, whatever I said, I bookmarked it all on my calendar, so it's live.
He said, here's the deal. If 1 year from now, Mir isn't being used, not only by Ubuntu. Now, this is where you got crazy.
Yeah, I wanted to be ultimately fair to the people that are like, oh, he's going to cheat.
I think you got your hands on some catnip when you wrote this.
Yeah.
Not only Mir, so he wrote, if 1 year from now, Mir isn't being used not only by Ubuntu, but also by at least one additional distro not based on Ubuntu.
I wanted to be fair, because otherwise I don't want to say, oh, see Ubuntu's doing it. No, I want to be fair to the guy. You know,
maybe Arch. Arch would count.
Yep.
Even though Arch doesn't technically.
Well, Arch doesn't have a default, so I gave them a pass, too.
Okay.
I said that. I won't count
really?
That in my favor. No,
now, here's what
Arch users will understand.
That was
I'm not gonna,
out. That was
so I want
out.
To say, I want it. It can't be Arch, because Arch would be cheating on my end.
So what are you
going to
do? What are you going to do if this doesn't happen? If Mir fails to ship an Ubuntu and one other distro, what happens?
I'm going to have to really reevaluate my attire for the segment in the show. I'm going to have to really.
You're going to wear a monkey suit on the show.
Yeah, if head and all, folks, it's going to be monkey time, and I'm going to be dressed up like a sock monkey for the show 1 year, according to...
If in 1 year it doesn't ship. So we're talking, it needs to be in an Ubuntu release.
Yep. Otherwise, I will be doing the recap in a monkey suit.
Are you sure you don't want to say Arch counts? Are you sure?
Nope, can't. I made a commitment. No, I committed to the audience that I was going to not cheat.
Oh, my
gosh. And that would be cheating. If I said Arch, that's cheating, because they don't, from my understanding, they don't have an official display server, and that's a total weasel thing.
It just seems like a huge gamble, because building a display server in a year alone...
You've got a little heart on his sleeve, and you got to love that, right? I mean, who's not going to want to see me dressed up like a sock monkey?
See, I think there's going to be some technical hurdles to get to run on other distros that could take longer than that.
Oh, maybe, but you know what? I feel confident that they're going to have to really invest some serious cash and some serious development time, and I think
I mean, they got
otherwise
some,
they're going to peter out.
They got it on the it's
so
on
I
the
think
line.
They will. I think they will. And if I'm wrong. I dress like a monkey. Everybody wins.
All right. Well, I mean, I can't argue with that. That's definitely a win for everybody there. All right. So I want to talk about a couple of things regarding the whole Mir and Wayland. I'm having a Chrome issue while I stall here.
Oh, yeah.
Come on, Chrome. Just attach that. Oh man. I got to switch from Chrome. Every time I complain about Chrome on the show, I either get a bunch of emails saying or a bunch of comments saying, what's wrong with Chrome? Or I get, you should try Firefox. I'm like, I haven't tried Firefox. All right. So first of all, the Enlightenment camp came out.
Yes.
So guess what? We're backing Wayland, and this includes all of the Enlightenment libraries, which are plentiful and
monkey
useful.
Suit.
And they're throwing in the Enlightenment project is throwing in behind Wayland. Okay,
all right. Okay.
The other big thing that came out,
I'm already feeling nervous.
The GNOME project.
Oh boy.
Here is from worldofgnome.org, and it's titled "Working on a Bigger Proposal." And it starts, after Canonical's announcement to abandon Wayland as an X server replacement and build their very own display server. It was time the GNOME Foundation make their move to and fast forward their plans for GNOME in Wayland.
Oh no!
So this is based on internal discussions. Okay, so this is nothing's here is totally 100% rock solid confirmed. Actually, this is what's going to happen yet. But this is the way these conversations are trending. He says, just a heads up. This is Matthias. He's on the GNOME mailing list. He's a GNOME developer. He says we better get working on Wayland. Mm-hmm. And they go on to talk about how the community needs to get behind Wayland. We need to have a GNOME shell working as a Wayland compositor even.
And see, I disagree. I don't think. Don't worry about this Wayland thing. It's a trend. It's cool. Don't sweat
Everybody
it, guys.
Get Mir.
You're fine. Yeah.
You better pre-order that monkey suit. That's all I'm saying. Now here's where it gets even more interesting. Is now we're getting some cash behind Waylon, in a sense.
Uh-oh.
Indirectly.
Okay.
So coming from Christian Schaller, or Schaller, who is a longtime Red Hat employee for, I think, about 15 years almost.
Wow. That's quite a commitment. Okay.
He's taking on a new role within Red Hat. There's a transition in place from the former, from Jonathan Blanfold, who is transitioning. He's stepping down as the lead of the Red Hat desktop.
Oh,
and this Christian Schaller is stepping in as now the lead of the Red Hat desktop. And if you might not have known that Red Hat actually has a desktop lead, but they do.
Yeah, no idea.
And here's what he said in his Hello to the Community blog post when he was saying, I'm taking over, I want to introduce myself. I pulled this piece out from his post. He said, one major piece I'll be tackling is making sure we in the Red Hat desktop team work even closer with the Fedora community to bring forth some great improvements to Fedora and create an even more integrated and seamless experience for those wanting to use the Fedora desktop. Okay, that sounds
promising.
Vague, but promising. Yeah, it's typical.
Aren't you embracing Mirror? Yeah. That's good.
Now, here is a couple of... Now, then, boom, boom, just a little bit of info bombs he just drops in this next sentence. This ranges from working with the Fedora team on a new software installer.
Oh, that could be big. That could be very
big. And I'm assuming he doesn't mean the new installer they just got.
No, I think he means brand spanking new.
Maybe he means like a software center. Maybe he means like a new way to do RPMs. Yeah. Two, working on getting Wayland ready for deployment in Fedora. Womp, 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 womp. Monkey suit, monkey suit, monkey suit, monkey suit. Oh, man. I think that monkey suit's coming, man. I mean, now, I think it seems very likely that Canonical coming out and causing this ruckus with Mir,
it definitely jars
made people
stuff.
Go, you know what? We do kind of need to align. And I think we'd all just been kind of, not we, the royal we, have just been sort of sitting around expecting Wayland to just kind of happen, but nobody was really getting serious about it.
I think, yeah. And this kind of lit a fire under their butts. It's certainly lit one under mine.
So. Yeah, chat room thinks monkey suit too, by the way.
Yes, I suddenly have this craving for bananas and sock monkeys. I don't know what's going on.
I should just mention, you can join us live Sundays at 10 a.m. Pacific over at thejblive.tv for the video, or jblive.info for the audio. That would also be 1 p.m. Eastern, right?
Yeah, I
believe and, so. And that would be, 5 p.m. UTC?
Yeah, I think so. I'm not good with UTC.
But
Math.
You can join us. We'd love to have you in our chat room and going along with us. Now, Matt, our last story of the week, which brings us to our next segment.
Woo!
OpenSUSE 12.3 has been released.
Yes, it is.
Now, what was interesting about this is this was sort of an accelerated development cycle for OpenSUSE. Now they did this. They did this since the 12.2 release was delayed by 2 months, if you might recall.
Well, I remember that. I remember that, and it was still kind of like really. Yeah.
And you know, I'm sure that was probably due to maybe the transition with Attachmate. I don't, you know, who knows, right?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Could be a variety of things.
Technical things, all kinds of things, right? So they sped up the 12.3 release cycle to 6 months. They typically have an 8-month release cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So 12.3, in order to get back on track, was sped up a little bit. But you know, we'll talk about what kind of
we'll get into
it in a minute.
Yeah.
And now they're back with this release. They're now back to their 8-month cadence. Of course, 12.3 ships with KDE 4.10. It ships with GNOME 3.6.
Lots of new stuff.
It's UEFI support, secure boot support, which is great.
Fantastic.
It's got you name your desktop, XFCE, Enlightenment. It's got E17 in there. It's got LXD, of course.
All the goodies.
Tons of virtualization support. OpenSUSE has continued to be a top-tier OpenStack ready distro.
Yep.
We've worked hard to integrate a lot of the OpenStack stuff in there.
Some
they're seeing
cloud action there.
They're seeing a ton of success there. So, anyways, it's out now. So, I just wanted to cover that as a news item.
Yes.
And with that done, Matt, I think that's all the news for this week. Let's go review OpenSUSE 12.3. All right, Matt, it is time to review OpenSUSE 12.3.
Mm-hmm.
And I am a OpenSUSE user that goes way, way back. I used to buy it in these big boxes. With these big old manuals and like these DVD trifolds that you would open up, or CDs, it would be like disc after disc after disc. Did you ever see
off the shelf? I do remember they came in cardboard even.
Yeah, it was so great. Yeah, cardboard, and you know, it was a real ritual and a real process. And back then, you had to buy them.
Yep.
To actually get like your hands on it right away, they wouldn't put it available for download for a while. OpenSUSE used to be really closed up. So OpenSUSE It wasn't. It was just called SUSE or yeah. SUSE. Yeah. It was, you know, the open when they transitioned to OpenSUSE, that was a huge transition, and so it's been fun to follow
Novell, I believe, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and watch them sort of, you know, the 12 series has been great. To see them come out with their latest has been really interesting to watch. And now we're going to give you our little teardown of it and
we got some
what
thoughts.
We liked and maybe what we ran into as well. So before we jump into that, I want to say thank you to our segment sponsor, System 76.
Woo!
System 76 creators of my Bonobo Extreme and many fine Linux systems that are born to run Linux.
And run it like a champ.
And, you know, if you want a hassle-free experience, you want something where you set it down, you boot it up, everything's working just the way you want it, this is where System 76 comes in. They are a boutique specialty provider that understands and actually participates in the Linux community, and they know what you guys want. And they also, something we don't mention too often, have some great servers over at System 76 as well. So, and you know, it's one of the great things about System 76, if you're getting a desktop, a laptop, a server, you're not going to get that deal where they pass the buck. Oh, that's an OS problem. Oh, that's a hardware problem.
I think the Jackal Pro is a refresh. I think that was, I think one of them was pretty new, I believe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's pretty cool. And they really do understand what you're dealing with and what you're going through. And they support you. Really good, you know.
And, you know, System 76, we recently had their CEO on our show. So go check that out last week if you missed that. All right, Matt.
Good stuff.
Let's talk about OpenSUSE 12.3. Now, I think one of the things that's interesting to note is they've opted to ship with some maybe older packages in some cases, like LibreOffice and GNOME 3.6, although you can't really fault them for GNOME 3.6.
And that's fine.
GNOME 3.8's not out yet. But the LibreOffice, I think, was primarily an interesting choice since they are such a heavy contributor to...
Yeah, maybe they know something we don't. Maybe there's something that's yet to come about that they're going to wait for the next refresh.
Well,
you know,
maybe. I mean, I bring this up because I think it shows sort of an old school philosophy that's behind OpenSUSE that I think a lot of longtime Linux users are going to be really comfortable and sort of innately understand. And that's sort of where I come at OpenSUSE is they are, in a lot of respects, in my opinion, I'd be curious to get your thoughts on this.
Okay.
They are sort of bringing with this release the best of a traditional Linux release and sort of like bringing a lot of traditions like copious release notes, lots of documentation, you know, a DVD that you can download that is just a full-on installer. It boots right into the installation. It's got XFCE, KDE, GNOME, all in one thing.
Details. They're
lots
very detail-oriented. Yeah.
Very advanced
very
partitioner.
So.
You know, the ability to flip on LVM and ButterFS and not being afraid to give you all the info you need, but at the same time, wrapping it in an installation that is also simple enough to click through. And that's always kind of been their strength.
Yeah, they seem to have a nice balance between enough granular control to give you the control you're looking for, but at the same time, you're not having to basically put it together from scratch. You're not in the kitchen making cookies, you know, from scratch.
Right.
So, I mean, I kind of like that. I kind of like that nice balance they offer.
One of the things that they have done that is sort of a big change from, you know, the bad old days or the good old days, however you look at it, is the messaging and getting the word out about OpenSUSE has really been polished up in the last few releases.
Oh, big time.
I mean, not only did they have a great media outreach, they've contacted us, but they contacted and other media outlets just kind of say, "Hey, did you know we have a release coming? Here's some info," which is always really great because you know they're very knowledgeable and they're very helpful. And but they've also been doing this series of posts, sort of like
that's cool,
leading up to the release of OpenSUSE. And one of them here was this: OpenSUSE 12.3 awesome is 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
And they went through and they talked about some of the polishing touches, like, you know, the completion of conversion to systemd, which is always, I think, fascinating to sort of watch, especially as, a distro that sort of has its own heritage and its own legacy moves to a new technology that's been developed by the community. And they're doing a really great job, and they've kept some compatibility layers in there. So that way, if you have old scripts, they'll still work.
Which is awesome. And thank you for that.
And the post goes on to kind of, you know, point out a lot of the polish features and things like that. But it's just a really good, like, introduction to here's what OpenSUSE is about. Here's some of the details. Like, here's why we went with this version of the kernel. Here's some of the
nice
underlying tools, right? Really kind of giving you an overview of all the different features that at a glance you might need to know about. And here's why I think this is really key, is OpenSUSE is sort of facing this problem where I saw this thread on Slashdot, and this guy was like, oh, I'm not happy with the Mac anymore. I used to run Ubuntu. I switched to the Mac, and now I think I'm going to switch to Windows. Did you see this on Slashdot?
No! Wow, are you going for
And the guy's like, you know, Ubuntu's not doing it for me, and there's just no other Linux distro that I want.
Right.
I just don't want to try anything else, and
just kind of burn out.
Yeah.
Maybe? Okay.
And so what? And which is just completely ridiculous because the Linux landscape is constantly changing, and so OpenSUSE is kind of taking that head on and saying, you know, they're being their best advocate. You know, this is one of the big complaints I've had with Fedora is a lot of times they release and then it's just kind of this wiki page and maybe, you know, a few Planet posts about
the reason why I care is lacking in their in their stuff.
Whereas OpenSUSE is really clearly illustrating why you should care. So I want to kind of start with that. So I think that's really great. And one of the things they've drawn out, mm-hmm. which both you and I were really impressed with, is the way they're integrating the build service
into
OpenSUSE. And this, they've been doing this for a little for a few releases now, but it is so easy now with 12.3 that this is, I think you have to consider the build service to be one of the key features now of OpenSUSE.
Oh, definitely. It's the completely the reason why you care. It's what you would actually consider the differential, I think. You know,
yeah.
It's really the differentiator.
I guess we've talked about it a lot before. So just a brief overview is the build service is like this platform that really anyone in the open source community can take their packages, upload it to the build service, and it will build and create packages for different distros, including OpenSUSE. Mm-hmm. But it can also create devs and all kinds of stuff. What's brilliant about that, though, is if I'm, say, I'm the creator of, I don't know, gedit or whatever.
Right. You pick any application.
I submit my code to the build service, and when it builds it, it automatically establishes a repository that OpenSUSE users can then go search for and one-click install. So,
which is slick.
Very nice. So think of the PPA system that Ubuntu has with a centralized repo and a interface designed around managing doing this kind of thing, like with intent to do this kind of thing. And this is – so over here on the OpenSUSE package search page, you go here in your favorite web browser, and let's just say you wanted Steam.
Yeah.
Because that, for me now, is like – bottom line, if I'm going to use a distro, I've got to be able to use Steam. Right. How easy is it to get Steam through this on OpenSUSE, right?
And keep in mind, one thing while he's doing that I want to point out is that this isn't just like some random, you know, dated build. This stuff's pretty bleeding edge.
Oh, well, yeah.
So this is like a PPA without all the actual having to go find the PPA and then add the text.
Yeah, I search for Steam, you know, right? And here I can see repos for 12.3, 12.2, and 12.1. And I click on the 12.3 because that's the version I'm running, right? And they have unstable packages. I say continue, and I have my options to do a one-click install.
Nice. Love that.
I did that. So then after a few minutes, I have the latest version of Steam that seems to be working. I've installed a couple of games
to run pretty well,
just to try it out. And it really was a total non-issue. And, you know, back over at this package search, the thing that's great about it is, like you said, they're the latest. So now I've also gotten Steam updates through my package manager. Mm-hmm. I could go here. I could get the totally fresh, latest version of VLC if I wanted it through the package search. I love this.
Well, here's where it really sold me. Kazam on Ubuntu. You can find it. You're going to PPA it, and that can be kind of a pain. It's not a big deal. But in this, you type in Kazam. There it is. Same bleeding edge version. Well, hello.
Interesting. Kalsaki in the IRC chat room says that the build service also does analysis on memory leakage and stuff like that. So it's doing some sanity check when it builds these packages.
Oh, yeah.
And I think this is so cool because what they're kind of doing is they're providing a free service to the community in general saying, yeah, are you an open source project? Do you want us to handle the package building?
Oh, that's
we will
nice.
Do that. They have a hosted instance, or you can run it yourself. And then if you use their hosted instance, at the end of the day, we as users can take advantage of those packages on OpenSUSE. Yeah. So it's this great thing that helps the open source community and also helps OpenSUSE. And so that, I think, you have to consider that to be an integral part of OpenSUSE. And once you go and do that one-click install, and by the way, it didn't work for me in Chromium. It worked for me in Firefox.
Same thing.
Chromium didn't know what to do with
Chromium, I don't have much success with at all, but in Chrome, it worked fine for me.
Firefox,
I'm sorry.
Yeah. And it not only does it install the package, but it'll also pull down any dependencies because Steam had a dozen dependencies it needed, and it adds all to the repos. So I think that's really cool.
And it did it butter nice. I mean, just really just smooth.
Yeah. And you can see here, like, watch. So let's, you can search for just about.
KDEN Live. There's another recently updated app that
RSSL. RSSL. Yeah,
but try KDEN Live. That was one I was really excited to see.
You can see even when I typo, you can see.
Hey, did you mean?
Yeah, it's a pretty fast. Like KDE, pretty wide, broad result. I mean, look, it still returned all the results pretty fast. Here's all a ton of stuff.
Right.
Just a ton of stuff. And that kind of brings me to the next point. There's been a lot of talk recently about that distribution that starts with a U that is Debian-based and going to a rolling release.
Mm-hmm.
See, now, this is where you see the maturity of something like the OpenSUSE project that has just been around for a long time and really gets this stuff. OpenSUSE has actually already solved the very problem that Canonical is struggling with right now. They call it tumbleweed.
Mm-hmm.
OpenSUSE calls it tumbleweed, and this has been around for a little while. And the tumbleweed project provides a rolling release updates to your OpenSUSE installation. And what's really keen about this is you can convert your existing established install into a rolling release at any point. Now, of course, there's disadvantages to
there
doing
are,
that.
But how cool is it to say, okay, I want the advantage of the rolling release, but I don't want to have to start it from scratch to be able to just kind of morph that in? That's awesome.
You know, like, okay, so 12.3, you know that there's going to be, I believe they have an 8 month plus two support window. So it's, you know, to the next distro plus 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, you know, you should probably upgrade to the next one. Well, why not at that point, instead of reinstalling, why not switch over to Tumbleweed? Or when GNOME 3.8 comes out and you're on GNOME 3.6, why not go to Tumbleweed and then just have GNOME 3.8 kind of just trickle down? And what they do is it's not like this raw feed of unstable packages.
Exactly.
They sort of have this stabilized snapshots that they do.
There's some vetting going on.
Yeah, and then they release those. So it's a it passes a little bit of the sniff test before it just goes out and gets pushed down to your hard drive. I think it's a very elegant way to take to allow users to switch up to rolling when they want when it's starting to feel a little stale. And
I love that because, I mean, between that and the package search, it's just like, oh, these are features I kind of like.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, yeah, that's kind of nice. I like that. Yeah.
Now, I do have a couple of negatives. Before we get to the negatives, I want to just give a mention. We try to talk about this every release that we can, but Yast. Yeah. Yast is a very unique component to OpenSUSE, and I feel like we'd never quite give it its service. A lot of times after an episode, people are like, oh, effing Yast, I don't need that.
Right, we just kind of glaze over some of the features, but not really.
I want to tell you why I think Yast is still relevant. So Yast stands for yet another system tool, right?
Sure.
And it's been around in OpenSUSE forever, and it comes from the good old days when you really had no way of configuring your system. X was not automatic.
You needed this.
Yeah.
You really needed
So that is Yast's origins, but it's been moved forward over the years, and they kind of are – you can. One of the things I've noted with OpenSUSE is they're constantly in this struggle of should it be managed in Yast or should it be managed with the desktop native tools?
Yes,
you know, and
exactly.
There's still a lot of that happening in – like with software management, there's a KDE software front end that's nice, Apper. Right?
Yeah, Apper. And it gets a little confusing because it's like, which one should I use? And you can use either.
And then there's the Yast one that it looks different, but it gives you different options. They're all talking to the same package, back end stuff.
And if you're a Linux enthusiast, it isn't a big deal. But if you're a newcomer, it's a little overwhelming. Yeah. It's kind of like, oh.
So there is still like some notes that are a little maybe quite a little bit off that I think over time it'll become obvious where some of that stuff should land and it'll, you know.
It may even be an issue just a balance between choice and ease. And I think that for their target audience, I think I don't see it changing.
And I suppose if you were used to the Yast tools for a long time.
I think that's probably what's
I want to show you, though, what I thought was kind of neat is Yast still manages to give you some really fancy features in a really easy-to-digest interface. So check out this Security Center and Hardening area that's in Yast. So if I fire up this little Yast, I don't know, applet, whatever you want to call it, it brings up this security overview window. Now check this thing out.
That's freaking awesome.
I can check out from one screen, I can see the status of what is the remote access to the display manager status. Oh, good, it's disabled, and I get a green check mark because that's a good thing. But you can see here, use secure file permissions. I'm missing.
No, you need to configure that.
I don't have my permissions locked down as well as I should, right?
And it has a help file for each individual LIP there, so you know what you're doing.
And you can also throw it into some predefined, like I'm a home workstation, I'm a network server, and then it'll sort of lock down certain things. You can, from one screen, you can amp up your password settings, so I can change my password encryption method from DES to SHA-512 or whatever boot settings. You know, I can change what the interpretation of control delete is here. From again, not impossible to do, but very nice to have one screen to manage it all for you, right?
Yeah.
I can change a lot of little settings here that, again,
pretty slick.
It's just nice to have a really easy to use interface sitting on top of all of that.
Definitely,
right?
What a time saver, right?
Yeah, and here's another fun one, just to kind of show you. I'm kind of going to the extremes.
This one's cool. This
but
one's cool.
You can go in here and you can actually tune some of your kernel settings inside Yast.
Yes.
With a, you know, it's just fun to be able to do this with a GUI, right? You go over to kernel settings and look at this. Global I/O scheduler. I can actually choose what I want my global I/O scheduler from a dropdown.
Yeah, which is like mind-blowing.
You know, it's like, wow, it's deceivingly simple to change some, you know, some settings that might honestly get me in a little bit of trouble. But then on top of things, there's some that are not quite as out there but are still very useful. Like there's a very good little system backup tool that lets you build types of backup profiles that you can go in and say, I want this to back up to an NFS share, back up, you know, every single night, all this kind of stuff. You can go here, I'll show you. I'll make a little test one here. And here I can give it my names. I can tell it what to back up. I can tell it what type of encryption.
That's so awesome.
It's just nice to have this in here. Again, you could make this yourself. You could probably find an app that would do this for you. But it's nice just to have it built into one thing here.
Yeah, I'm actually really, really happy with it. Oh, and then, of course, the audio controls when we typed in sound.
Yeah. Now, I don't know. This, I think, is just KDE 410.
This may be, but again, this is something that was kind of cool because I don't think a lot of people know about it. I've never seen this.
This phone on control module for KDE, the KDE Plasma Desktop, as they like to call it.
Yes.
This shows you... Okay, so a lot of the great features that we're kind of glossing over in OpenSUSE are some of the great features that are just in KDE 4.10 and GNOME 3.6.
And we acknowledge that.
You know, if you look at their pages, a lot of that stuff are there. But in the most cases, you guys know about these. So you might know about this one.
Sure.
But this is so cool. And this is a great example of where the Linux desktop's getting to. Matt, you pointed this out. It lets you go into device preferences for your audio control. You can say, I want music to go to these speakers. Yeah. I want video games. I don't even know how it knows.
Well, and I think someone in the chat room pointed out it's most likely saying, oh, you're doing some OpenGL stuff. We're going to go ahead and because the manager does say sound and video configuration. Yeah, so I would imagine that's probably built in.
I love that. You know, you can say, okay, I want my video playback on these speakers. I want Skype playback on these. Yeah.
And while this has been on KDE for forever and a day, and I acknowledge that for someone that's not using KDE, this is all new to me. Yeah. I've never heard of it. You know, so it kind of matters in that respect.
Yeah, there's the KDE experience in OpenSUSE is
and they're
one
bringing
of the
that
ones.
Tool and the KDE experience to us. Yeah, and that's really neat.
They're
nice
really
job.
Good at bringing out the best in KDE. And so here's an example. If you're watching the video version right now, very clean UI.
Yeah.
It's got a dark background with this green like vine on it.
Yeah, lots of cool curves.
What's
Love
so
it.
Cool about that? This is just, their grub screen is themed with that, right? And then the boot screen is black. As OpenSUSE boots up, it's black. And then the vine slowly begins to fade in. And then by the time KDE is loaded, the vine's fully illuminated because it's the background. So from the grub all the way to your desktop, it is one seamless transition. And that vine that's there, that OpenSUSE vine,
doesn't feel so clunky.
It kind of fades into life.
They did a nice job.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm really shocked that I'm actually digging this, but yeah, they did a nice job. That's not to say it's perfect.
Yeah, let's talk about some of the you bumped into what I think is a bug.
Well, there was two bugs. One was easily fixed as far as like overcome anyway. It was not a big deal, but it would kind of hang up on newbies. Now, when I first got everything running, I hadn't run updates yet. I went to run the updates.
Yeah.
Wasn't connected. Yeah. I'm connected hardwired. It's Ethernet.
Oh, you were wired.
I was wired.
Oh,
And this is what was interesting. It's like you couldn't be any more normal in this. And I went to update. It wouldn't connect. I was like, all right, let's check out what's going on in the network manager. Went and looked, and it alerted me that my networking was not enabled. Okay, weird. Checked the checkbox, rebooted, and it was fine. But if you're a new user, that's a little fuzzy.
It's surprising. So you're saying you're out of the box first boot experience,
no
network at all.
No, this was on a built for Linux machine, so it was kind of weird, and it may just been a fluke or whatever.
I've heard there's a few, so I think
just a little hiccup there.
I could be wrong.
It was easily fixed. It wasn't the end of the world, but it was like it wasn't running. Yeah.
I think some of that now is controlled by systemd. And they're kind of transitioning from that being controlled by network manager to having it controlled by system. I could have
and it was probably fixed in the updates that I ended up running, to be honest.
There's a bug out there. I saw there's a forum thread about it too in the OpenSUSE forums.
One other issue I ran into, FFmpeg. Real simple. Everything else installed fine. Was able to install packages, update packages, uninstall packages. It all ran great. Went to go and install FFmpeg. No.
Like from the software.
And this was from
build
the software. Yeah, this is from the build service for software, and it was not evident. It gave me some options, which was cool. None of them allowed me to use it. So
I would say some of the software in the build service it might be a little hit and miss because I ran into something that didn't successfully install. I can't remember what it was. It wasn't critical, but I think it kind of depends on the quality that gets submitted. You get crap in, sometimes you get crap out.
And that's kind of what. And I don't blame OpenSUSE for that, but I think maybe it may have been.
But there probably could be like there's probably additional logic checks they're always throwing in there and stuff like that.
Yeah, could be. Now, it's enough to be kind of disappointing.
But let's talk about it. Let's talk about it maybe from like a switcher's perspective because I think some people are getting frustrated with some of the decisions that Canonical's making, and maybe you might have people that are thinking it could be time to switch to distros. A Linux Addict started a thread in our subreddit, and he said, I've been using Mint 12, and now I'm using 13 with KDE. Ubuntu was my first mainstay, but the whole GNOME Unity thing turned me off. I just couldn't deal with either, so I downloaded OpenSUSE 12.3 and played with it live. Looked at the installer and let it go up to disk allocation. What a clean slick, and it seems logical installer. The look of the desktop, KDE, looks very good. My question is, I'm planning to replace Mint 13 completely with OpenSUSE 12.3 running KDE.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. My target machine is a laptop. It's got an HP laptop, and he's looking for the first accounts of experience and pros and cons. And I thought we'd give him our pros and cons, so he's switching from a Debian-based Mint.
Yeah.
I think his biggest pro is that he's already on KDE.
Oh, that's a big help.
And because if you're already a KDE fan, you know, you will find the OpenSUSE 12.3's implementation of KDE compelling to you.
Absolutely. Yeah, you find it to be quite attractive and know where everything is.
And with KDE committing to a monthly update cycle to the KDE 4.10 Plasma desktop, and with Tumbleweed available in OpenSUSE, it seems like, you know, you could hedge that that's going to be one of the best ongoing KDE experiences
and
out
there. And I see Tumbleweed, being the olive branch or even the little enticement to get people to rethink their whole scenarios. Like, oh, hey, now that's compelling. That's interesting. I'll check that out.
So, and, you know, one of my main reasons to run Ubuntu is the PPA system because so many people provide software. And if, you know, I'm going to start checking for stuff in the OpenSUSE software.
That's what I've been doing because I'm sitting there going, a lot of it's matching up. If I get the FFmpeg thing fixed, then
You can always search for a package that you want Linux Addict. Just go to software.opensuse.org and see if they're there.
And it's cutting it. It's literally right on par with the PPA stuff. I was really impressed with it.
Yeah, yeah. I got to say, I think he's going to like the change. I come from an old school where I kind of like the idea that if my installation breaks, I can boot up off the OpenSUSE installation media, and they have a really competent repair mode.
That's what's missing in Ubuntu. God,
or really any adult operating system, any operating system that's meant to be used by adults on real computers where people need to fix their problems and get back to work. It's probably a good idea to have some sort of recovery environment. If you want to be serious, and I love that OpenSUSE gives me that now.
Well, I think OpenSUSE's recovery environment was superior to other distributions. My opinion.
Yeah, I mean,
vastly.
And it's even got intelligence. Like if you have driver hardware issues, it's kicking you out of display mode. It'll go to this nice incurses interface. The installer has the capability of being remotely controlled and managed.
Well, it's intelligent. I mean, it's not put together. It's not just slapped together as here's basic options that we think you can handle. It's actually giving you full control.
Yeah,
I love that.
So I think you're going to like it, Linux Addict, and I'd be kind of interested to hear what hiccups you run into because, you know, if things don't go the way I like with my preferred desktop right now, this and Arch kind of are my two contenders for an alternate replacement.
Because I think, I mean, Arch's advantage, and Arch guys will certainly chime in on this, I think is probably that versus cutting edge software, you're getting bleeding edge choices to where it's like literally that night, that day, that bleeding edge. But OpenSUSE has definitely got the cutting edge down. I think they're pretty compelling.
They're blatantly just coming out there and saying, you know what, you want to use this on the server? You can. You want to use this on the desktop? You can. You want to use this on the cloud? That works too. And they're just embracing that. Because remember, one of our previous criticisms has been really twofold for the last couple of releases was, who's the target audience?
Right.
And I think what OpenSUSE is saying is, you know, some distros want to be crazy, and they want to make a mobile version and a TV version and a desktop
one
version.
One size fits all. Yeah.
And that's their vision, right? But I think what OpenSUSE's vision is, Touch is okay. Touch is great. But we're going to focus on making a great desktop. We're going to focus on making a great server, and we're going to try to make something that scales across those platforms.
Exactly. And these are platforms they know and have been doing for a long time.
And it seems like a much more achievable goal. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's not really a criticism I hold for them anymore. And the package manager, while there's multiple ways to interface with it, and those ways, like if you're using one, you can't use the other, which can be a little confusing.
It's a little much. But once you get used to it, it's not that bad.
It's pretty good now. It's fast. It's very fast.
It's actually very fast.
Yeah. So
I'm not getting the broken package nonsense I was getting before as much.
There's ways to do things in OpenSUSE that I have to learn. Like I didn't, when I wanted to load XFCE, I didn't quite appreciate that I needed to go choose a pattern for XFCE the XFCE packages.
And I was okay with it. For when I went from KDE to GNOME, I just went to the pattern and said, oh yeah, I want the base and I want the GNOME and I'm good. You know, and it just kind of worked out.
And I have one last critique.
Okay.
And I just want to, I'm logging in now to the, here's an XFCE install of OpenSUSE 12.3.
Right.
Very underwhelmed.
See, I prefer this. This is me. And this is where we differ.
It's great. It's fast.
But it is very, it's not sexy. I mean, I will give you that. But
very very bland, very generic, basic icons, default stock icons, default stock.
You got to dress it up to really enjoy it. But see, for me, that's what I prefer, just because it is less overhead that I don't need.
For me, that's what LXDE is for.
Yeah.
I would love to see I think OpenSUSE, the way they polished GNOME and KDE, if they just applied a little bit of that polished XFCE, gave it a nice theme, gave it its own nice icons,
right.
made XFCE feel like a great desktop, I feel like it could be competitive.
Well, and I think the way they set it up is that there's nothing stopping a third party from here's like pre-done theme setups or whatever. And I think that's kind of what they did. They said, look, you want sexy, go to KDE.
Well,
you know.
Yeah, that is very true. Yeah. GNOME 3.6 and KDE.
Because, I mean, for me, it's like out of the box. But, I mean, these other lightweight desktops are ugly.
But here's what's
funny. You can sex them up.
I actually think they did a better job sexing up LXDE here.
That's not bad.
I mean, it's not a dramatic difference, but I just expect less from LXDE to begin with.
Right.
So there you go. You know, all the desktops are great.
Mm-hmm. Well, and if you're using a launcher, you don't care. That's my philosophy. Whether you use GNOME, or whatever, you don't care.
The chat room says it kind of looks like Vista.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah, but again, you can just theme it. Yeah. Whatever it is, just theme it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You guys are all Arch users. Theme it.
Yeah. What? No, I think they're OpenSUSE 12.3 users now.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah.
Good for you guys.
A few additional links in the show notes to give you resources to read up about Tumbleweed. I think that's pretty compelling stuff read up about the build service. Also, go check our previous coverage on the OpenSUSE build service, and I would bet we'll be hearing some more about it at LinuxFest.
Absolutely.
So they usually have a presence there as well.
And they did a nice job. I'm very happy with it. I mean, for the first time ever, I found that OpenSUSE has really got my attention.
Yeah, I think for me, the big hurdle that I was still hung up on was package management. And I felt like I totally grokked what the build service was going to offer.
Yeah.
But I was still having issues with the underlying tools, and I just don't feel like I'm running into that anymore. And I feel like the build service has also matured at the same time, so the two things have kind of come together and solved.
Right.
The primary problem I had was getting software for OpenSUSE, and then the problem was installing it. And I feel like both of those are now not totally ideal, because some of the packages aren't great in the build
service. Yeah, some of the packages need some help.
I still have some tool confusion. Being resolved.
And I can get past the tool confusion as long as my packages work. That's all I'm asking, man. Just, you know, you got the cutting edge packages down, and that's awesome. Let's just make sure, you know, that all of them are working, like FFmpeg.
Yeah, and if you've tried out OpenSUSE 12.3, we'd love to hear your experiences. Yeah. Send them into the show, LinuxActionShow at JupiterBroadcasting.com, or you can hit the contact link at the top of our website, or start a thread in our subreddit over at LinuxActionShow.reddit.com.
And it boots so good.
Oh, it boot real good, Matt. Ooh,
It boot real good.
All right. That's the Linux Action Show's look at OpenSUSE 12.3. That brings us to the end of this week's broadcast. But Matt, before we get out of here, what do you think about covering some emails?
Yeah, let's get to it.
All right. So we got a few that we've been needing to get to. These first two come into my inbox fairly frequently, and I wanted to just put it out there. First one is, I can't sign up for the form. The Jupiter Colony CAPTCHA is not working. That's because the form is going away.
Oh, well, that's a pretty good reason then.
Yeah, you know, it's just not really something that a lot of people do anymore. I don't know how to put that.
Oh, the form? Yeah.
Yeah,
no, the forms are so yesterday.
I think. So one of the things we're trying out, and it's been going really well so far, is a Jupiter Colony community on Google Plus. So if you want to just go over to Google Plus and search for the Jupiter Colony, we'll probably be transitioning. I think it's...
I throw up a redirect and be like, let's learn, folks.
I think I might. Because, yeah, I get probably two or three of those a day, people trying to sign up. Yeah. And I'm sorry.
I've had a couple of people mention that to me.
Yeah. So the Jupiter Colony form is not working for new signups currently.
Yes.
And we'll probably be doing a redirect soon. All right. Another thing that I get probably a couple emails about a day, and it's just something we need to address here, is Christian writes in. He was one of many. He says, hey, guys.
Hey.
Linux Action Show MP3 feed doesn't have an icon embedded, so it appears as a blank text only in my podcast player.
Huh.
The video feed has a LAS icon, but the MP3 feed doesn't. It's a cosmetic problem, but I'd like to have LAS appear in my podcast player like all my other subscriptions with a nice little piece of artwork.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
If anybody out there is familiar with FeedBurner and how to add and change artwork to an established FeedBurner feed, I believe it's possible, but I don't see anything in their menu options. And that's so I created that MP3 feed back before you kids had your fancy MP3 player right. displayed right, images right, on right, them. Right. I mean, seriously, like the Rio was the MP3 player of choice.
And I'm trying to think back on any of my old enclosed feeds. I can't remember if that was done through feed. Well, that must be. Yeah.
I don't know. Sure maybe if people have familiar with the process, because I would like to do that as yeah. well. All right.
Cool.
Now, Chris J. wrote in and said, Hey, guys. I love the Linux Action Show, guys. I look forward to it every week, and I'm wondering if you could maybe do a little Kali Linux review. Something with a little penetration testing in general.
Yeah.
I'd like to see what you think. I think that's a great idea.
I think we could do that.
I think we'll be doing that soon. Now, not next week. Next week, we have a surprise.
Yes.
We have a surprise. But that'll be coming soon. Now,
yep.
James sent in a voicemail to the show.
Nice.
On the whole mirror, and he zones in on lack of testing and peer review as perhaps the reason why people are getting upset with
Matt,
Canonical.
Great show. Okay. Thanks for all the hard work. James here. I was listening to your System 76 interview, Carl, I think. Anyway, he started to say something that made me realize sort of why some of what Canonical does generates the hate it does. But I was like, half a sentence ahead of him, and he didn't actually say what I thought he would, so I want to say it here. So while he was talking about how one open source software package replaces another based on merit, it occurred to me that since it's like science, you have an idea and you collect evidence and you build a theory, you write a paper and you get it published for all your peers to find fault with, and only then can you honestly say that something you have something really worthwhile. And the same applies to open source software. Someone has an idea and it gets beaten about, you know, proven, people find fault, those faults get fixed, and then, you know, only then does it usually earn the right to be part of a major distribution. I think that the hate on Canonical over Mir is not for doing the wrong thing, although I can't say I'm a fan, I might yet be converted, but it's because of this brand new project with no track record and no understanding in the community. It's been promoted to one of the most critical pieces of software in Ubuntu without the peer review it would normally have, you know, without people understanding it. And, you know, I think that's why people get upset. It's literally because it's not had to earn its stripes. Yeah, I'm sure there are other reasons, but I'm convinced that's a major one. What do you guys think about that? Cheers, anyway. Until next time.
Well, first of all, I agree with the chat room. I want James to narrate my life.
I was just about to say, I want him to read me bedtime stories. That's the first thing. I was like, oh, man, I would totally curl up in my monkey suit, cradled, and have him read me stories.
You might as well order it now, Matt, so we can enjoy it for a while. Great points. Yeah. Really,
really interesting points.
I completely agree that I think the reaction is particularly visceral because of the lack of peer review. And it's, like he said, a critical piece of the desktop technology stack.
It is. No, that I agree with. I'm still very much in a wait and see mode. You know,
I mean,
it's Linux, man. We can use whatever we want to use. Right. We don't like what they're doing. We'll use something else.
But James, thanks for sending us a voicemail. It's great. We haven't had one in a while. So
and well said. Everything was really well said.
He attached it just as an OGG file. He threw it up on his Ubuntu One account and then sent me the link. And I just clicked on the link right here in the show notes and was able to play it. So
there you go.
So thanks, James. And we'd love to hear from you out there, too. If you'd like to send in a voicemail, you can. Usually it's simple. It's just for people to record it. I will give a plug, though. If you can join us tomorrow, Monday, for Coda Radio live at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, we're doing a call-in episode.
Oh, sweet.
So we need people to show up and join us live so they can call into the show and chat with us about topics.
And what time was that again?
9 a.m., noon Eastern.
Good.
9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, jblive.tv for Coda Radio call-in edition. While I'm plugging, I should also mention coming up very soon, we will have a new Jupiter Signal. If you want to go over to bit.ly/Jupiter Signal.
And that's very important to subscribe to this because sometimes there's things that we may not always mention in the show that you will find in this newsletter.
Yeah, it's a lot of times important. There's just stuff like about 40% of what I actually mean to talk about makes it into a show.
Exactly, yes.
So
there's a lot of important detail there you want to check out.
I also just want to give a plug. This last week, you might have heard about the shenanigans about Beyonce and Jay-Z and Michelle Obama and Joe Biden's accounts getting hacked and their information leaked online. Yeah. Well, the story's totally bogus. It's complete exaggeration, and I debunked the whole thing in episode 41 of Unfilter. The whole cybersecurity thing is blowing up. CISPA's coming back, and all of this is basically building up to that. And we break down and play the clips that sort of explain it all in episode 41 of Unfilter called Internet Securities.
Good
analysis. If you want another show to listen to, go check out Unfilter 41. Great episode this week and some good analysis on what I think is going to become another SOPA-CISPA type battle.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
All right, Matt, what are you up to?
Well, as always, you can find me at datamission.com. Scroll down to open source and click into there and you'll see me in the list.
I like this Ubuntu Display Server Fallout article you wrote.
Yes,
recently.
I kind of just explained my view of it, where it's going, where it's come. Yeah. I did not mention the monkey suit. That was not included. But I kind of gave my perspective on it. And it's definitely worth a read.
Yep, link to that in the show notes.
Yes.
As well as links to his Facebook and Twitter and and G+.
Yes,
and my Facebook, G+. Twitter, and G+ as well. And I want to give another mention for our IRC chat room. Just go to irc.geekshed.net in your favorite IRC client and then join Pound Jupiter Broadcasting. We have about 200 or so people idling in there all the time. Nice. Only a handful of them are active at any given time. And then, like, right now, we've got, like, another 400 additional in there that are hanging out and chatting. So, during shows, there's always more people. And it's always a great way to just get in touch with people and find out what's going on, because the IRC is always the heartbeat of
events. It's a great resource, questions, just community.
And we also have a lot of people that often stop by and will ask, like, Linux questions, because, it's the Linux Action Show's chat room.
Makes sense.
If you feel like helping out some noobs that are coming and stopping by with some beginner questions and want to idle in there and answer a few, that's always appreciated as well. It's a good way to help the community. All right, Matt. Well, that's everything for this week's episode of the Linux Action Show. We'll be right back here next week. What? Dun, 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 dun. What? Dun, 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 dun. Sorry, I'm just looking at pictures of Danica and Patrick, and then we'll be ready to start once I've done.
Once he's done.
Want a
Kleenex?
I got a box over here. Are you talking about Bing right now?
I am talking. Now, here's the comical part.
Screen. Hey-o. Hello, everybody. Hello, everybody. Getting started here. Hello, everybody. Getting ready for this week's episode of the Linux Action Show. Hello, everybody. Come on.
I would sooner scoop my brains out with a fork than use Bing. I hate it. I don't like using Bing because their search results
stink. Yeah.
But from a webmaster point of view, it kind of matters, and anyone out there will tell you.
Well, I suppose if they're going to show, hello, everybody, coming
and
at
this
you.
This was not live for that person that asked. This is actually all pre-recorded.
Right. Yeah.
We are
sorry
not actually
about
live.
That. There's no way in hell we are going to actually work on St. Patrick's Day.
No!
We have errored. We have wronged the people of the podcast community.
No!
And today we will admit our sins and beg for your forgiveness.